My name is Pooja Appana, and today we are talking with my friend Ron. Listener, welcome to Woodside Lane.
In DC for this program called the Institute.
Cool.
I think the full name is the Institute for Responsible Citizenship. Very, very long-winded. So I just say the Institute. And in essence, it takes 12 black men, college men across the country, brings them to DC and matches them with internships. And we meet various execs and political leaders, all these different things. We bond. It's really, I think the biggest pull for me was sort of that brotherhood that you feel. You know, it's a very close-knit group. We still talk even after we departed D.C., which it's a hot place. It's very, very humid.
Yeah.
I was sweating a lot. But, yeah, so I was at a law firm this summer, primarily healthcare law, which was interesting because when I first heard, okay, healthcare law, I'm going to be doing like malpractice and trying to, you know, ensure that people get insurance coverage, all these different things.
Right.
And then, yeah, I learned quickly that that's not what I was going to be doing.
What did you end up doing?
So it was actually the opposite.
Okay.
I remember there was this case, and it was like, you know, I don't know. Well, I never signed an NDA. I don't think I have to really. But no names involved. But in essence, it was like, well, you know, here's this procedure. And our goal is to, you know, the insurance company won't cover it. I'm like, oh. Kind of unfortunate. Like, why are we?
Yeah.
Want people to get coverage.
So you're like protecting insurance companies? Is that?
It was so unfortunate. That's why I was like, I guess I'm not doing healthcare law. Like, it's just not. If this is what it means, I will not be doing that.
Was it just healthcare law you experienced, or was it like other?
Well, experience? I did. You know, I think the most enjoyable part of it was this pro bono assignment. It was regarding. I know towards in the summer there was discussions about the eviction moratorium being lifted, right? And it was trying to, and there were various organizers and political leaders trying to extend it, which is a good thing. But there was this client who was going to, their housing provider wanted to evict them. Mm-hmm. They weren't even accepting any form of payment, no partial payment or anything.
Yeah.
And sort of being able to dive into that project, read about what was the moratorium at the time, what were the different renter rights and all these different things, to, you know, try to sort of craft a defense in a memo form to say, you know, This is illegal. You know, as simple as that.
Yeah.
But I think that was probably my most, you know, fulfilling assignment that I did outside of the like, the healthcare and the labor and employment related things. But you know, I think for me, if I do decide to go the big law firm route, like I want to do as much pro bono work as I possibly can, because that's really where I think my desire lies in that legal space. It's not like I don't want to enter the legal field for the purpose of mergers and acquisitions. It's more so, you know, how can I set a precedent that maximizes, you know, the welfare of most people?
Yeah.
And try to, you know, navigate it through that water.
No, definitely. And I like, it's interesting because even as a business student myself, mm-hmm. it's a very, especially for me, I feel like I have a lot of this social responsibility.
Yeah.
In which obviously I want to do great things for the world,
yeah.
but also probably as a woman, probably as a person of color as well, I do have this need to take care of myself in a way that, you know, obviously I do have to make a little money here. You
Absolutely,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm spending like over 350 grand at NYU.
Yeah, yeah.
So for you, kind of that whole like, I guess, battle between like being socially responsible and like obviously having to make your money and obviously having to succeed in your life too, because I bet that's a big struggle for you as well.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, by the time I'm 30, I sort of want to get out of the big law space into politics. So I have those 6 or so years where it's like I'm paying off loans, you know, and saving money here and there. Like sort of my four pillars are, you know, how my parents probably pay off their house, sort of have money set aside just for emergency purposes, have money where I can, you know, support friends or young people who are in their projects and their visions, right?
Yeah.
So have enough money for that. And then, of course, you know, NYC is not the least expensive place in the world. So maybe to have, you know, a way of life here. But yeah, sort of, you know, doing what I can in that period of time where I can still feel like there is that impact, there is that, you know, social responsibility. And that's one of the things that I think over the summer I learned a lot about, because in our meetings with various finance groups, it was like the two things that they were pushing is, you know, impact investing and socially responsible investing, and just hearing, you know, the ways that finance, which I think, you know, when it's said, it has like a negative connotation to
it. It does.
Yeah, right.
It does. Finance, business, it's about, you know, making money. So yeah.
Yeah. And I think trying to find, you know, how can within a capitalist space really promote, again, the social
well-being. Yeah. I think for me too, I realize it's also about a balance as well. Like, obviously, like, you know, give as much as you can, but I feel like at some point, if everyone kind of gives a little bit, it, like, it's so much better than one person kind of giving up their entire lifestyle for it.
It was a Friday night. we had this program has a sort of a thing with very long meetings. So it was Friday. I think we were supposed to start at 6:30. And we started at 7:10, but there's this thing where when we're eating dinner, none of us can eat dinner or even sit down in the chairs until we're all like in the same space. So we're all just standing behind these chairs. And we're sitting there, we're waiting for the guests to arrive. And, you know, we're just chatting. It's like, wow, you know, and we were joking with each other. We're like, do you think we're going to eat and then give our introductions? Because we had this sort of this, we had to drill intros before, you know, like, I want to say the first or second day that we started this program. And just like, this is the intro that you give every single time that, you know, we meet someone. It's like, okay. So the guest arrives. This guy named JT, he's an amazing student. He's doing a JD MBA, MBA at Harvard, JD at Yale. And it's just like, after being a Rhodes Scholar.
Right.
After just like all these different things,
I'm
like,
basically,
wow.
Basically being crazy.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? So he walks in. I was like, okay. And of course, you know, we sit down and he's like, all right, you all do your introduction. So that's 22 people that have to do an introduction before we can even eat. But we are very hungry. Yeah. Like, and I don't even think it was like this. Maybe it was sandwiches. It was something very simple. It's not like I was about to dive into, you know, lobster and say, it was a very simple meal. I'm just like, I want this. And, but, you know, and he's exploring sort of his time where he, you know, came from New Jersey. A lot of people saw him growing up because he was involved in the school board as a student representative. And they said, oh, you know, you're the next Cory Booker. You're the next Cory Booker. And he was like, you know, I don't want to be the next Cory Booker. I want to be, you know, my own person. But sort of just hearing how everything that he was doing, you know, the extensiveness of applying for the Rhodes Scholarship and doing it, and then what he's about to tackle with the JD MBA program at Harvard and Yale is to bring it back home. Right, he doesn't want to forget the people that, you know, sort of molded him and helped shape him as a person. And I think just hearing those stories where it's like finding that way to give back to the people who have helped shape you,
right,
is sort of just like, it was consistent across the board. Even with, we met this Washington Post journalist, I'm going to say Eugene Scott, and similar things. It's like, it's the journalism space is a hard space to navigate, especially as a black man, but doing it and just remembering it's like who I'm doing it for. It's like, there's not a lot of voices like mine in that space.
Right.
So let me always be sure that I'm uplifting it and elevating, you know, people in the community.
Yeah, and also to show kind of an example, I guess. I don't know, that's kind of a good and bad thing, because I feel like one person shouldn't like define represent an entire group, but it's kind of the truth, I think, of this modern days. Like, you know, for me, like being, you know, a Mauritian like woman, whatever I do, is that's what people are gonna think.
Yeah.
Regardless of like what I can't really change it, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and that's really inspiring to hear someone who's like doing really crazy things, but just never forgetting the fact that, you know, little old Jersey come on
Jersey. The court. And I will say, you know, I often slander Jersey. I'm just like, you know, I feel like, you know, you either grew up in Jersey or you got a job in New York and you're like, I'm going to live in Jersey. But I don't know if anyone's, you know, like my Texas self is saying, hey, you know what I want to do? I want to move to New Jersey. everyone's life has a lot of material to it, right? There's so much to work from. And I think a lot of people, you know, see things as, oh, I'm not capable of doing this, or X, Y, Z. And for me, I think what this program has shown me that not only am I capable of various things, but there's so many young people who, when given the platform and the opportunity, are just going to be trailblazers and set this world on fire, right? And being surrounded by that at all times. Like, we lived together. We did all these things, different things together, grabbed lunch. And just, like, you have no other choice but to just want to be amazing. And not for yourself, but for them and for the people surrounding you and all that.
Right.
So I think, you know, it was really cool. And I'm sort of just like, you know, everyone, and as they sort of navigate the tough waters of next summer's internships, I'm just like, your life has so much to work from. Just tell that story. Tell that story how you want to tell it. Don't allow them to change your story, only to make it clearer.
Honestly, that's how the Gen Z right now is contributing to the political scene.
Yeah.
That is the biggest way they are. TikTok, Instagram.
The black squares were...
Yeah.
That ended racism for decades.
Yeah, and like... So yeah, I bet you have a take on that.
I do. How would I say this? My thing is always do what you can from where you are at, right? So for some people, that is activism through social media. For, you know, people who are able-bodied to go out to a protest and participate in it. But I think everything has to be done with intentionality, and you have to understand the meaning behind it. So what was the intent behind it, and what was your desired outcome, right? Make awareness of Black Lives Matter? Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how much more awareness can be done in terms of Black Lives Matter. It seems like a very...
aware situation.
A very aware situation. So it's like, okay, well... now, what steps are being involved in that? It's like, it's to uplift resources or to elevate resources. Okay, well then, identify certain resources that, you know, you participate in or you know others participate in, and then let that be the post, right? Here's some resources that I am going to, you know, amplify,
mm-hmm.
support that. I think, you know, Instagram infographics are very helpful to just consume information very quickly in a convenient way that I think a lot of our generation prefers versus reading a book or an essay. And I'm saying this as someone who is not fond of reading. And I know this seems very odd. It's like, you want to go on a law? I'm just, reading for fun is not my cup of tea. I will say that. But if there is something that I want to learn about and dive into it, then my source will not be, well, this is the infographic I saw on Instagram. And this is now the foundation of my knowledge on this issue. And I'm going to tell it to everyone as if, you know, I've researched it for centuries, yeah. Right? And it's like, oh, yeah, slow down. But for me, it's more so, you know, I like Twitter. They can get more of my thoughts through Twitter. But often when it's like I don't know a lot about an issue, I will, you know, if it's someone that I trust and I sort of just cross-reference that, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. And I might retweet it or like it or whatever. But I think it's just
Do you think many people would cross-reference?
No, not
I don't
at all.
Think so. Because I don't think so. Like, no. I think people just see some stuff sometimes and just repost it.
I'm like, oh, bet. I'm like, whoa.
Okay, I'm like, hold up.
There's a contradiction in this exact tweet.
I know. I'm like, I guess I did I was working on this study at Stern about how it was all about, you know, inclusion, diversity. And one thing that was a big part of it was performative activism. And I learned just like by listening and stuff like that, that performative activism is actually a really, it's a negative thing. Mm-hmm. It's an extremely negative thing for causes because at least for me, like for example, the black squares, like obviously like totally understand the intent by that. But at some point I was just tapping and tapping faster and tapping faster. And the thing is like, if there was infographics mixed in there of something that I actually wanted to read, just continued tapping because I just kept seeing the same thing over and over. And, like, while I appreciate, obviously, it's really great, like, all these, like, posts and it's really good intentions, sometimes not clogging up your feed with symbols, I guess, I think that's a little more helpful than anything.
No, absolutely. And people can share infographics. Absolutely. I'm not opposed to that. It's just that I just hope that there's more to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is an infographic I'm just resharing because my friend reshared it. It's that I've learned about this. This isn't, you know, because if it's, again, my whole thing is, all right, if we want to spark growth into people, what is the best way to sort of ignite that evolution, right?
Right.
And I don't think the black square is going to
change
that, right? Yeah. But if, and that's why, you know, I lean more into conversations with people. And
yeah, of
course. And I want to be very clear. I don't think it's our obligation as black people to constantly, you know, pick up the phone for people who are like, you know, so I want to be less racist today. I just need you to tell me how that can happen. Because I'm like, the material is out there.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those people where, you know, I'm always willing to say, look, give me a call. We can talk about this. I will never go back and forth with someone on Twitter. Ever.
No.
I'm just like, I don't have the energy for this. I remember
I'm like,
who are you? I don't know. If you don't have my number and we can't communicate through that, then it's like, this is not a conversation worth my energy. But I remember it was the blacks was trending on Twitter, like just that phrase. And I was
what does that mean? Okay.
I was like, all right. This is, and it was, so I decided to tweet informed comedy, because a lot of my Twitter, I like it to be comedy. And I was like, the blacks trending today, reparations. I need reparations expeditiously. That's what I said. And I put my phone down. I check my phone 2 minutes later. Retweets like everywhere, all these different things. It's like, oh, you're just lazy, go get a job, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, you all really want me to reply to this. You all really want me to reply to this, huh? And I'm just like, I won't. I don't have, it's not worth my energy.
But people do stupid things sometimes, and that's okay, and that's fine. And but also, I don't think it's the other person's responsibility to call them out on being stupid. Like, that's not my job.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it has to be. And that's why, you know, I always want to come from a place of, whether it's optimism or, again, how can I ignite growth in people?
Right.
So it's like,
I mean, I guess, like, use a word, like, to describe that was a little bit of backlash, I guess. Is that a correct word?
It could be that. And it's just, you know, what is gained from an action, right? Mm. So if I reply to the people who are dragging me so aggressively, do I help the situation or feed into what they think I am? Or do I just sit there and, you know, I'm like, here is some recommended reading.
It's interesting because some people I know really like to go to the shame route. Like, they will shame the person till death, and they don't care if it's shame or hurtful. They just want the person to believe it. And of course, it's effective. It's an effective way of convincing people. But then there's also the other route of being a little more patient and letting them say what they want and really coming out of this no judgment zone, which is definitely the harder path, which is also a path that will probably not change their mind immediately and all that type of stuff. So I guess, like, it's not really a question, but it's sort of like it's an interest. Yeah. And how do you really approach these conversations?
I want there to be a level of accountability, right?
Right.
Whether that is people choosing to deplatform them, whatever it may be, that is perfectly okay. But again, I think what has to follow is, at least for me, is I want to still get that person the space to grow, right? So whether I'm the one that's going to pick up the phone and say, hey, here's who, you know, I recommend looking into this. I recommend conversing with this person if they want to. And sort of because giving them the space to grow versus let me shame them. Let me...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of like TikTok and social media culture is like that.
Yeah.
The actual change comes from sitting here and understanding a person and whatever. But I do understand how effective it is, if that makes sense.
I think it takes a lot of patience. I think, and I understand, you know, it can be very taxing and tiring to feel like you're having the same conversations over and over again. I remember in 2020, one of the people that, you know, I had opened for a conversation and gave me a call. And it's like, we were having, you know, a conversation about, well, what is systemic racism? And for me, I was like, I feel like I had this conversation with people in 2013, and I'm sort of tired. At a certain point, I want the conversation to be more nuanced and progress past what I think, again, is bare minimums. But I make a choice where it's like, all right, I'm going to choose to be patient with this person, sort of walk them through the generational things and all that. That is not something that I would sort of mandate for everyone.
No, I don't know.
Again, it's a very draining thing to feel like, I've been, again, Google is free. the material is out there. I don't have a PhD in this. I'm just going to tell you what I've read and sort of this, that, and the other. But I do, so I understand why it's frustrating and people are just sort of have lost that patience. But I think, again, if my end game or outcome is growth in this person, then I guess it's like someone. Unfortunately, until, you know, people take it upon themselves to learn, someone has to sort of
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do want to say that too. Like, I mean, definitely in a different respect, because I'm a girl. I have a lot of friends that are guys. Yeah. I have a lot of straight guy friends. And they definitely do not have bad intentions at all. But sometimes the stuff that they say to me or the stuff that they do is just like, you would not do this if I was a guy.
Yeah.
But, and I totally understand, because sometimes I'll sit there and I'll call them out on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm too fucking tired.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll just like let it go. Or like next time it happens, I probably just get like 10 times more upset than I should have.
This is not a PG.
No, this is not a PG podcast, no. No. But yeah, in the sense of like, usually like, I'll get tired or I'll blow up 10 times or something I should not do, but it's also not anyone's job to sit there and inform somebody else of the biasness or of some sort of what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I totally get it too. I do think the more effective way is to sit here and have a conversation about it. Whether it's, you know, because I'm a vegetarian too, whether it's about eating meat, whether it's about being a woman, whether it's about being a person of color, whether it's about being like an ambitious woman as well. Like, it's really, like, it's a lot. And I totally understand. So kudos, because like a lot of people would not open up that conversation and let people just call them.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think it's one of those things where, and I'm glad you mentioned it, sort of, I try to be as conscious as possible when I'm in spaces and I'm like, okay, I'm a straight male in this space. I'm a RA, residential assistant. All the other RAs are, you know, identify as female, and I'm the only male in that group. And, you know, I told them during training, I'm like, look, I want to make it as clear as possible. I want to ensure that I'm not taking space and I'm not being the overpowering voice. But if there's anything that happens, what makes you feel uncomfortable, whatever it may be, like, let me know. But at the same time, I'm going to do my own work to sort of ensure, you know, like, I don't want to just be like, again, I told them, I was like, I don't wake up and say, you know, how can I perpetuate patriarchy today?
Right.
You know, that's not what my goal is, but sort of just like open that door of like, look, I recognize it and I want you to know that I'm going to do the work for it. If there's anything that you see, it was just like, hey, Ron, you know, don't be doing it. It's like, let me know. And
yeah, it's also about your willingness to take accountability as well. Like, even like for me, like, yes, obviously the areas I mentioned were like more minority spaces, but there's some things in my life that are a little bit of a majority, you know, like I've never had financial insecurity, like stuff like that. Like, and those are obviously things that I'm extremely grateful for, but it's also like, I understand that I won't be able to understand some of the struggles that people in these other groups have.
Yeah.
Right. And when it comes to that too, it's really all about taking accountability.
Yeah.
Like I genuinely don't think anyone's perfect. I don't expect anyone to be perfect. Like even my guy friends, the people in my life, I don't expect that.
Yeah.
It's just the willingness to sit there and listen and be like, my bad, I'm just gonna try to be better. I will not be perfect, but that's just the way it is.
I will close Twitter at 12:03 and open at 12:04. I think there's a whole news feed that I'm about to see that I didn't see a minute ago.
Yeah.
But,
like Twitter?
I love Twitter.
That's so interesting.
And it's wild because, you know, I saw this one tweet and it sort of described how Twitter lives work. And it's like, you download Twitter. And I think I downloaded it in like 2015 or 2016. You start it for a little bit. You have no idea how to use this app. You're like, do I actually tweet something? Who do I follow? How is my feed? How is the algorithm going to curtail to me? Right? And then it's just like, so then you leave it for like a 6 month, a year period or whatever. And then you come back and there's no turning back. And you're on there all the time. And I'm just like, but I love Twitter.
Are you on NYU Twitter?
I am.
And oh my God.
Wow.
do you want to explain NYU Twitter?
NYU Twitter is, so I think it's, honestly, if I could describe NYU Twitter, it is it's like a Hulu show of main characters put together. And the problem is not everyone can be a main character. But
snap, hot take, hot take.
You know, exactly. And I think
we'll go to NYU a little bit later.
You know, and it's like, it's very, it's filled with very bold individuals. And I think what was funny is that there's so many people, because I think NYU Twitter really, at least my biggest introduction to it was through quarantine, right? And just seeing, you know, the different personalities, very funny, very talented. I will say this, very talented group of people. But then, like, people were just tweeting things. I'm like, that's just so, it's wild. But I'm also like, again, I can't even put a name to the face. I'm like, who? I've never met you, like, on campus. This is so, so strange. But NYU Twitter can be a very, I feel like the word toxic is overused, but it can be toxic, it can be funny, it can be...
I think it's rash sometimes. Sometimes NYU Twitter makes a little bit of a judgment, a little too fast.
Yes, and you...
NYU Twitter needs to relax sometimes with that, but I do think it's a really cool way to connect.
Connect, yeah.
And also, NYU Twitter gets information out like that.
Oh, that's the thing. I'm like, I feel like the number of things that I learned about the university through NYU Twitter, I learned that, I think, whenever housing was happening... And we were like, who's going to get housing for 2020? I learned that through NYU Twitter. I was like, whoa, this is a news source, officially. But no, I agree with you on the rash part. And I think having a lens on certain administrative things and knowing what is happening and then seeing it, you know, sort of explained on NYU Twitter, I'm like, there's a disconnect
here. I remember this one time, it was like something that was like, it was a situation with me and my friend. And the minute it hit on my Twitter, we're like, fuck. We're like, no. And then, because one of my friends is also on NYU Twitter, and she was like, oh, no. Like, once it hits NYU Twitter...
It's done. You're cut off.
Literally.
I joke with my friends. I'm like, look, if I ever scroll through NYU Twitter and you're getting dragged, I really don't think there's anything I can do. Like, I can console you, but there's...
If you're in, like, the thing is, I have a couple friends that are like really in NYU Twitter, yeah. So they follow everyone and they're constantly seeing it. So it's like, if you are able to cut off the first tweet, beautiful. If you do not cut it off within like 5 minutes,
it's done.
Are there like specific leaders of NYU
Twitter? The leaders of NYU Twitter? Oh, I don't know.
They're all main characters, so I don't know.
I have to say, so this is one of the things where a friend of mine from first year, and we're still friends. And it's like, so I know her life outside of NYU Twitter space. And I'm like, there's a whole bunch of people who only know her from NYU Twitter. My good friend Aisha, I think her handle is Princess Jihad. I think. I could be wrong. But she's...
I think I might have seen her.
Yeah, I feel like I want to pull up her account so I just get this right. But geez, it's comedy. It's also bold. Like, I will say, given this is not a PG podcast.
Yeah.
It will be like 2 p.m. And then she tweets something like regarding, you know... It's always, well, no, not on the topic. No, it's very, very different to be like, I need my back broken today. I'm like, Aisha, the sun is out. It is 1 p.m. But it's Princess Jihad, my good friend Aisha. I'm going to shout her out. Wonderful follow, though. Very funny. Love her. I'm trying to think who else is NYU leaders.
Are there specific people who, like, will bring the tea?
Yes, and can I be honest?
Yeah, go ahead.
I had to mute some people, and I don't think they know that. I really, because and it was such, a relieving thing. Because I'm like, I love Twitter, but it again is just so draining to always. Because here's the thing, I will be the first to say, the university does some very, very low, fucked up things.
Oh yeah.
I see them firsthand. I'm like, this. And there are things that's like people don't even know, and I'm like, I'm aware of this. But sometimes I want to go on Twitter and just enjoyment and comedy.
Yeah.
Every time it's like, oh, this is, and I'm just like, oh, I know, trust me. And I'm just tired. So I had to mute some people. I had to.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went back and I muted a couple, but they don't know this. And I don't want to, I'm not naming names.
Of course not.
I feel like I have to interact with their tweets on occasion just so it's like, no, I still see your tweets, but honestly.
Wow, this is like really calculative.
it's a good time.
This guy was the biggest social butterfly I've ever met, and I was a massive social butterfly. Like, I knew everybody, but Ron knew, like, everybody. I knew plus, like, 40,000 more people. I was like, what the heck? And like, and back then, I was also going out all the time, meeting people all the time. I was like, how is this physically possible?
That's what's going on. It's a lot of late nights. It's a lot of a lot of my time. I think my first year. So I'm very extroverted. I will acknowledge that. I think a lot of my first year.
Extroverted is like a downplay.
I think what I saw it as, NYU is a very large school, and I almost saw it like a challenge. Like, okay, how extroverted can I really be? 50,000 total students, 25,000 undergrad, 25,000 grad. How can this work? So I sort of took it as a challenge, and I'm like, I'm going to interact. No, not necessarily. I'm going to make a positive impact on as many people as I can through conversation, right? So I was one of those people. We're on the elevator. First day of classes, I'm asking, hey, how many classes you got today? Just starting that conversation. Cool, mm-hmm. Bet. Next time I see you, how'd that class go? You know, and just starting to establish those conversations there. And then, because I think it comes down to, once I see your face, I'm going to remember you, right? Names might escape me. But I'm going to be like, I know this person. I know who they are. And then I start to backtrack. I'm like, oh, I met you at this point of this, right?
Oh, so, my God. I'm sorry. This is so funny. I'm going to interrupt for 2 seconds. I have to say this. Okay.
Yes, do it.
Oh, I feel like this is heartbreaking.
No, it's not.
Because
we want your take on
it. Yes, we want your take. Okay. I was at, like, somebody, I don't want to be too specific,
ooh,
but last Last night, me and Wyatt were like hanging out with a bunch of people.
At a small function.
At like a small birthday party.
Meaning 7 or less.
Seven or less.
All socially distanced.
Yes, yes. Literally so, so small. And this girl comes up to me, and I know this girl. Yeah. Like, I know her. I've met her multiple times, yeah. Right? And I'm like, hey, I think I know you, right? She comes up to me. She says, like, all of my friends' names. And I'm like, no, we've met. Yeah. And she's like, I don't think we have, but, like, now I met you, haha. And I'm just like, no, dude, like, I know what you're trying to do, but, like, we've met before.
I've seen you before.
Yeah, I've seen you.
We've had this conversation.
Yeah, we've had this conversation before. Like, I know you're, in, like, I don't want
to
say, actually.
She's like, pretending to not know who it is.
Yeah,
so that she seems
I think
like
so.
Too many people to remember.
She, like, she's too
oh,
cool.
I hate that. No, I think it's better to know people. Why? That seems so strange. Why would you want to act like, oh, I've never, oh, there's just so many names. I can't remember.
Well, our thesis is that it's cooler to remember.
Yeah, our thesis is.
I think
is,
it is too.
Yeah, our thesis is, what she was like thinking was like, oh, like, I'm too cool to remember who you were. Like, you know, a little bit of high school nonsense.
I'm like, that's just dramatic.
Yeah.
Like, what?
No.
What did you gain from that?
No, I was...
all of Pooja's friends.
Like, all of my friends. And, like, the thing is, like, it's, like, all my friends that... I was the most social out of them all.
It's so like, how did you miss me?
How did you know all of them but not me? But it was very strange. So I just thought it was really funny that you brought that up because literally right before this, I was like, we were
a whole exploration, a thought piece of, like, no, this is what happened. Yeah. But
no, I'm so glad that you were able to make those connections because you remember these people. Like, yeah. I think it's really cool. And, like, I think sometimes, like, people in, like, social situations will think, like, oh, like, I'm too cool or, oh, I, like, whatever, that I don't remember you. And I find it really genuine and nice when people remember, and I do try to do the same.
Yeah, I think, you know, being genuine, especially at a large school like NYU, because I've always liked to remember that not everyone is going to be as extroverted as I am. And for some people, it's like that one interaction can mean everything to them. It's like, this is the second person to talk to me throughout the entire day. And it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, what does that interaction look like? Are they going to walk away from that like, oh, they didn't remember who I was? Or, oh, they didn't, you know, I needed someone to talk to me, they didn't. Or is it like, and again, we may go on and never see each other again, but it's like, I want them in that moment. I want to make their day at least marginally better.
Because you've probably felt that, right? That one interaction can change your
whole life. Oh, absolutely. And that's why I think I apply it to everyone. Because, like, I know when I needed someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And I didn't have someone to talk to. And it's like, oh. So now it's like, all right, I'm not going to put that onto anyone else.
Right. And I think, like, the value of just being friendly and open is something. Even, I remember, I think the first one or two. I think you did the same thing you were talking about, but you, like, remembered really specific things about me even in the beginning. And I was like, interesting.
My memory has been very helpful to me. A very, very strong memory. Yeah.
But yeah, like, so how has, like, I guess, like, knowing all these people, how has that kind of helped you as far as, like, the past 2 years and stuff like that?
It allows me, you know, when people ask me, oh, do you love NYU? Or how do you like NYU?
Yeah.
You know, and I say, you know, I love NYU. Does it piss me off at times? Absolutely. But I love NYU. And because it is the people. And I think it has made my experience so much better, where it's like I don't just have friends in certain circles, where it's like, yeah, I run track, but my friends aren't just on the track team. Mm-hmm. I do student government things, so my friend isn't just in student government circle. I'm in CAS, right? It's like you name someone, and they're like, oh, I remember Rory Myers. Oh, do you know person 1, 2, 3? Yeah. And it's like, and I think it's a way for me to connect with people. And that's what I always say. It's like, you know, when I'm walking somewhere, it's like I want to run into someone I know, because it's just like, it's cool. It feels good. It's like a dopamine rush. Had I not done that, I was like, there's a whole group of people I would have never met. And yeah, I think, you know, like I said, a lot of late nights just helped me, where it's just like I'm just seeing people at different hours, yeah, working on econ and different things.
Yeah, and I think people also like totally underestimate having a big social circle, even if you don't like keep up with them all the time. Like having a big social circle and like kind of making every interaction with them positive also for me has helped me out a lot.
Yeah.
Like as far as like even like for setting up this podcast, like, you know, a lot of people, different people help me out, but yeah, they've all been my friends.
Yeah.
And they all like, they help me out obviously because they think I'm capable, but like, yeah, also because like I think they just believe in me and believe in my vision, yeah, and believe that I'm gonna treat them right. So for me also, my social life has enabled me to like progress further in other areas in my life. With all these things you're doing, all these things you've done, all things you want to do. Are you happy?
Ooh, the question cuts deep. And that's when we go to commercial break and we'll, no. it's something that I've tried to explore a lot of in my mind. And this is why it's like, what I want to be, sort of going back to the question, is I want to be happy. And I think that when it's all said and done and I do all the things that I want to do, that I can have happiness, but I know that's not guaranteed, and that's terrifying. Because I think recently, especially, going into, for some context, into 2020. As we all know, 2020 was a very difficult year for a lot of people. At the end of 2020, so sort of the things that were happening, it was like second week of November, my aunt, my great aunt, my grandmother, both my parents and my cousin all, you know, contract COVID. I was like, I'm in New York, they're out in Texas. I was like, okay, you know, how are they doing? You know, my mom, grandmother, and great aunt are all, you know, diabetics, so pre-existing conditions, all these different things. At one point, three of them were in the hospital. All the other things, I think my mom had pneumonia as well. And I was just like, okay, you know, this is happening. But again, I tend to be a person that all hell could be breaking loose in my life, and I'm very still just focused. It's like, okay, they're gonna be good. Very optimistic. And so that's happening. And then, so I was supposed to go home for Thanksgiving. I didn't end up going home because of that. So like, okay, I'm staying here. So then I'm not a morning person. I remember it was Thanksgiving morning, and I see a missed call. It's at 10:30, so I know it's at, no, it's at 9:30. So I know it's at 8:36. I'm like, why is my dad calling me at, you know, this early in the morning? He knows I'm asleep right now. Like, come on. So I'm like, okay. So I pick up the phone, and he just says, like, hey, son. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, so, you know, your grandmother, XYZ, in the hospital, and, you know, and I'm just listening, because I'm listening. I'm just like, oh, okay. He's like, you know, she like coded last night to try to bring her back, and, you know, it didn't work out and things like that. So I'm just sort of processing all these things. It's like, okay. I was like, you know, and I'm just like, oh, no, I'm good. I'm okay. And I remember I get up out of bed, and the first thing I'm like, okay, I need to call my sister. I call my sister, right? But sort of as I stand up to sort of approach, I just like hit the floor, and I just like break down. I'm just like, wow. This is a lot to sort of take in. But I call my sister, and I'm just like, hey, how are you? How are you doing? And we're just FaceTiming. We're just talking to each other. And I'm trying to hold myself together as much as I can for her. And she's breaking down. I'm just like, we're okay. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. So thankfully, I had friends who allowed me to sort of join them for their Thanksgiving dinner and their family. They've been very helpful in my whole growth experience, I think, all throughout last year. So that was Thanksgiving. At the same time, as you know, we're 2 weeks out from finals, and then like I was supposed to go home December 1st, so for the, you know, services that were gonna happen on the 13th. And right before I'm about to go home, my laptop just stops working. Everything just, I'm just like, oh, well, this is unfortunate.
Yeah.
It doesn't turn on, and I can't, you know, send it over to Apple because it's like, oh, well, we're gonna ship back or whatever. I'm just like, I need my laptop just to do work. I had assignments doing all these different things. So I sort of like finesse the system. Someone was like, this is what you do. You buy a laptop, put in a credit card, you turn it in within 14 days. I'm like, okay, makes sense, because that gives me the time to have like a loaner until my laptop's repaired. So I ended up actually typing a couple papers on my phone, like just typing it through Word on my phone. It was just a wild thing. I remember at a certain point I considered, I was like, I have to go incomplete this semester because I can't type, kind of going through agreeing all these different things. But then I remember I was walking from Gramercy to Stern. And amid this, what is that, a 20-ish minute walk?
Mm-hmm.
It went from, I'm going to go incomplete, to, oh, I need to talk to my advisor. No, I have to finish this semester strong because I have 2 weeks left. And so it was just that progression. And I get back home, and I somehow finish the semester. I remember it was like the weekend before finals. I go back home to New Orleans for, you know, her service. And it was... It was odd because her service was like the day before her birthday. And it's just, you know, it was a very rough week. And I think I hit a lot of low points in my life. And I knew going into next year, I wanted to sort of be, I wanted to avoid low points as much as I could. So there's sort of three steps. It was do therapy, practice more self-care, i.e. my sort of self-care Sunday thing, and be more vulnerable and more open to people. Because I used to be very closed in person. I didn't really talk about, you know, the emotional things. And I wanted to do those three things because it was like I didn't want to be at the low point I was at so often at the end of the year. So it's a lot of growing and a lot of practicing that I've been doing. Therapy has been very helpful. It happens to fall on, you know, my self-care Sunday at 3 o'clock, so it's like great. And I try to be as open about doing therapy as I can, because I think a lot of people who know me see me externally as this always on person, and I sort of just want to provide that context of like, no, I'm still dealing with things, and I want to make
clear. Human.
Yeah, you know, I'm human. I think I try to get out of this idea that I'm a human without faults or without emotional, you know, dramatic things and all that. But so yeah, that was the end of my 2020, and now I'm here, strictly vibes.
So what did that make you think about happiness, like, in general?
Oh, yeah, that was the question. I think it's that my idea of happiness shifted. It went from, that's when that shift occurred of, like, okay, who I want to be versus what I want to do. And it's like I'm more than just what it is I do. And happiness is a hard thing, just as practicing self-care is a hard thing to achieve. But... I think I'm most happy when I'm surrounded by people who I appreciate. Because I don't know if they... I learned this from my English teacher. It's like, we can only concern ourselves with how much we appreciate other people versus the other way around. It's like, oh, I wonder if this person appreciates me. And it's just like, I can't control that. But I think you can do a pretty... You can gauge it pretty well, and especially if you care and, you know, are very thoughtful with people. I think that's when I'm most happy, and I sort of, my end game is to be, you know, is that blissful happiness. And I sort of want to work to garner that and gain that. And I don't know, it's a journey.
Yeah, happiness is a choice. Yeah. It's a choice on how you're going to live.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ron.
Woo! Oh,
thank you.
Snaps. Yay!
Thank you.
Welcome to Woodside Lane was co-created by Pooja Apana and Wyatt Sarkissian. Music by Sean Tyrese Avery and Milton Amparo. Presented by Apana LLC.